Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on your home for Saturday's Blue Goal game, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett. With me is Tyler Horka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated. You can read Tyler's work at blueandgold.com. He joins us on this Monday to talk Notre Dame football, specifically about the scrimmage that took place at Notre Dame Stadium last Monday. So we'll get some thoughts from Tyler on what he saw from the Fighting Irish right ahead of the Blue Gold game this Saturday. Well, Tyler, it's good to be with you once again. Thank you very much for your time. And I want to start with the 8 reported sacks that took place in the scrimmage that had between 80 to 90 plays within it. Now, I know the Irish are really working their offensive line, trying to find the best combinations. How do you assess the sacks, part of that having to do with lack of chemistry on the offensive line at this stage, but also factoring in that there appears to be some pretty good explosiveness from the defensive line, in particular some young guys?
Yeah, it's a lot of different things, but I'll start with this. I saw a first-team offensive line that is way ahead of the second-team offensive line, and that's good and bad because obviously that means there's some pretty good guys at the top. Like, I think Charles Jagasaw is going to be pretty good. Ashton Craig looks really good. There's, you know, really 3 or 4 guards that you have a lot of trust in. And we saw 2 of them playing on the first team offensive line, but Kenny Minchie was running for his life a little bit playing with the second team. And that was good and bad for him as well, because it allowed him to make a lot of plays with his legs. I was actually very, very impressed with his athleticism, his ability to improvise, get out, and pick up yards on the ground. But it also meant that there were some free runners coming at him, and there were some instances where both sides of the offensive line just didn't pick anybody up running across the edge. And that leads us to what you just said with the athleticism of some of these guys. Man, Boubacar Traore, I thought, looked tremendous. Sophomore. Obviously, he was a little buried in the depth chart, hardly played last year, but when he did play, he got a sack of Caleb Williams, USC. I get it, USC wasn't great last year, but that's still Caleb Williams. You're probably going to hear that guy's name called number one overall in the NFL draft next week. So that is no small feat to sack a guy like that. And he looked like on Saturday, Traore, a guy that could sack anybody. You know, you line him up on the edge enough times, he's going to come around, he's going to win enough battles. And like I said, especially if you're not blocking him, then he's definitely going to get to the quarterback. So, yes, the explosive plays along the defensive line, those were there. And I thought the stunts that Al Golden was running, I mean, this didn't look like a Saturday scrimmage in April, Darren. This looked like Al Golden was coming after USC or going after Texas A&M, Florida State, whoever it may be. I was very impressed by the way that he lined Traore up out there, Jalen Sneed, even linebackers, you know, like Sneed or like Kingston Villamuasa. He knows that he has some guys who are raw, inexperienced, haven't played a lot of football, but at their truest, you know, the truest part of themselves, at their core, they can rush the passer, they can get to the football. And I think Al Golden dialed it up for them. So good day for the defense, absolutely. The offensive line, again, there was a little bit of a drop off there from the ones to the twos and the threes.
I want to talk more about the defense in a moment, but let me go back to the offensive line. Do you think you saw the starting offensive line together during that scrimmage? If so, what did you see?
Yeah, I think I did. And the only thing that makes me say maybe we did not was Rocco Spindler was running with the twos. And obviously, for the better part of last season, until he injured his knee way, way late, and I think it was November when he finally went down, only missed 3 games. He was the, you know, a 10-game starter for this football team. Billy Shrouth moved into that role last year, and he really hasn't given it up. as Spindler has been trying to get to 100%, which I think he's nearing, but still might not be there. So that's the one spot, like I said earlier, you've probably got three guards that you feel really comfortable in playing, Pat Coogan being the other one. He is going to started all 13 games last year, lined up at first team left guard as usual in the scrimmage. So, and I mentioned Jagasaw. So you're looking at Jagasaw and Coogan on the left side. I mentioned Ashton Craig. He is by far your best center because, Darren, let me tell you, Sam Pendleton playing second team center, he had a lot of errant snaps, high, low, couldn't really find the quarterback in a shotgun situation. So that was a little alarming. Good thing you have Ashton Craig because I think he's for sure your starter. And then, it's that right side, I guess, we're looking at, Darren, where Spindler can maybe come back and compete with Shrouth and take his job back. That's going to be a little bit of a battle. And then Tosh Baker is really starting out of necessity right now at right tackle. He's been at Notre Dame for 5 years, has never been able to full-time starter. Having Joe Alt and Blake Fisher obviously dictates a little bit of that, but I think Notre Dame is going to be thinking all the time in the next 4 months, do we have everything we need at right tackle? Is Emil Wagner maybe better than Baker? Can we somehow steal somebody out of the portal this late in the game? I'm looking at that right side of the line, Darren, as areas where we may see a shakeup between now and August 31st.
Tyler Horka talking Notre Dame football, specifically the closed scrimmage Saturday at Notre Dame Stadium. Now to the defensive side, you've talked about the pressure that was put on that offensive line, including some young guys. Traore really stood out. This defense looked very elite in this scrimmage. And Tyler, it's pretty scary knowing that arguably your best defensive player, cornerback Benjamin Morrison's on the sideline right now.
Yeah, they just got pieces everywhere, man. I mean, all three levels, the line, the linebackers, the secondary, there's just really good players out there. We saw Jaden Mickey with the pick six. Xavier Watts, remember him? Led the NCAA in interceptions last year with 7. He got another one, got his hands on the football again on Saturday, took that to the house for an interception. We've been pumping up Adon Schuler for this entire spring. I thought he's had a phenomenal spring, just a sophomore. Didn't play a whole lot of football last year because Notre Dame had a couple veteran safeties in Watts and DJ Brown. He gets his hands on the ball, ends the scrimmage with an interception of Steve Angeli. So the secondary, especially when you do get Morrison back, I mean, those guys are set. You got three really good corners in Morrison, Mickey, and Gray. The latter two probably going to be rotating out. You hope Morrison's healthy all year because he's just going to eat up so many snaps, as is Xavier Watts. I think Schuler is coming into his own there. Jordan Clark, I thought, looked really good at nickel. He was covering up guys. Jaden Greathouse got the best of him a couple times, but Clark battled back and, you know, had a couple PBUs and looked pretty solid in coverage. So the secondary set. The linebackers, they're young, but there's just so much upside. I mentioned a couple of them earlier. That's without even mentioning Drake Bowen yet. I think he had he's just a really solid football player, does all the right things, smart player, really learned behind J.D. Bertrand, did his best to soak all that up. He told us that a couple weeks ago when we talked to him. He's trying to emulate J.D. Bertrand, but he's trying to beat Drake Bowen at the same time. And I think that's going to be a perfect combination for him. So, yeah, just across the board, there's so many guys. And I'll end with this. Riley Mills and Howard Cross, they still look very, very stout in the middle of that Notre Dame defensive line. And that's kind of where everything starts up front. So just a really good group, Darren.
Two-part question. Number one, do you agree with the majority that C.J. Carr had the best day of all the quarterbacks? Second part of the question is, did C.J. ever work with the number one offense, and did he ever face the number one defense?
The second part of that question, I believe, is no.
Okay.
I don't think he ever worked with the ones, and I do not believe he ever went against the first-team defense. After about the second or series or so, there was a lot of mixing and matching, but you could still tell when they were trotting out the best of the best with maybe just a mixture of twos here and there. And I don't think Carr ever faced that, but that being said, he was thrown into some walk-on receivers at times, and he made Jack Polian look good. And if you can make Jack Polian look good, then you're probably doing something special. And this kind of goes to the root of your question, Darren. I turned to my colleagues at one point. We watched this from the press box, and this was probably, I mean, we're talking 80% through this thing, maybe 90% of the way through this scrimmage. And I said, it's gotten to the point where CJ Carr deserves a shot out there with the one because he's playing so well. And I think we all want to see that. And I think I actually used this exact terminology and phrasing. I told them, Mike Denbrock's a really smart offensive coordinator. I get it. They kind of stuck to the script of ones, twos, and threes, and Jelly, Minchie, Carr. But if he keeps doing that, and say he does that again on Saturday in the blue-gold game, and then leading into fall camp or whatever, he's going to earn some reps. At least, you know, give the kid a series with the ones and see what he can do with those guys. Because, like I said, I was watching this unfold, and you mentioned seven or eight different beat writers and sources that said that he looked really good. I'm definitely one of those. I was sitting up there saying, oh, man, just give me one series of CJ Carr with the ones, because I think we deserve to see that, and I think he deserved the looks, to be quite honest.
Now, Marcus Freeman said this isn't a one-day deal. This has been consistently happening throughout spring practice, CJ Carr playing at a very high level. We're very early in this process. I don't want to jump the gun, but what do you think this means, big picture, heading into the fall?
Yeah, I've actually talked to some people that I won't disclose their names here, but, you know, just kind of talking about the state of this football program, where it's come from, where it's going, and it always goes back to the quarterback position, and it's always like, yeah, Jack Cohn was a great guy, but he was a one-year rental, and you know, he kind of hit a ceiling at Notre Dame, and Ian Book always had a ceiling because, you know, he was what he was, right? And just a gamer who could scramble around a little bit, and he was never viewed as one of those guys in college football. I think people around this program are viewing CJ Carr as a potential that guy, you know, someone who's mentioned with the best quarterbacks out there in college football, you know, the ones that go to Alabama and Ohio State and even Michigan now. I think a lot of people think that Notre Dame has that guy in CJ Carr. And that gets back to the quote that you just said with Marcus Freeman. It's been happening ever since he stepped on campus. And he stepped on campus as soon as he literally possibly could. I mean, this kid was taking Sun Bowl reps when all of his friends in high school were, you know, getting 2 weeks off of high school for Christmas vacation. This kid went down to Notre Dame and started practicing with the big boys and was a part of that. So it started as early as it could, and I think it's going to last a while too, because I kind of tend to agree with the people that I've been talking to. He's probably the next guy at Notre Dame. Does that mean he's going to start in 2024 at any time? Some things are going to have to break his way, and that would mean breaking the way or not breaking in Notre Dame's favor, so to speak, because that would probably mean a sustained injury to Riley Leonard and Steve Angeli looking bad, which nobody wants, or, you know, Kenny Minchie transferring. You know, some things are going to happen for CJ Carr to start football games in 2024, but I would not be shocked in 2025 if we're talking about CJ Carr starting quarterback in Notre Dame.
Not all the wide receivers and tight ends are healthy or can participate in spring practice at this particular time. But based on the players that were available on Saturday, were those units good enough? Good enough for this offense to take step forwards this year and ultimately be a playoff team?
Mixed bag, I would say. The one thing that really stood out to me was Jaden Greathouse can be a number one at a lot of places. And I think it's becoming more and more clear just how banged up he was last year. Because I can't get over Darren. And I know it was Navy, but it's Ireland. It's nationally televised. Everyone's watching. It's the first college game of his career. He looked really good on those two touchdowns that he scored in Ireland. And he looked really good on that touchdown that he scored in Pitt. And that was the back half of the year. He was finally coming back around a little bit. What I saw on Saturday was a Jaden Greathouse that looked like the best version of himself and probably even better. I mean, he's a sophomore. He's going to keep getting better for a while. I believe he was the only player to catch consecutive passes on two different instances in that scrimmage. So Steve Angeli looked his way two times in a row, and it worked two times in a row. I think he gained probably 40 to 50 yards on those two catches. And then it happened later in the scrimmage as well. Might have even been a different quarterback throwing him the ball at that point too. So he's a guy, and I think he can be really good. Jordan Faison is obviously a guy too. So they're going to be working in tandem and competing for reps. Mike Denbrock's got a good problem on his hands there. I thought Cam Williams looked better. He's a freshman. I think that Cam Williams and or Micah Gilbert can have the type of season that Errico Flores had last year, where, you know, he wasn't dominant, but he was consistent. He stayed healthy. And say what you want about Errico Flores leaving, but the stats that he put up at the end of the year, if you had either Gilbert or Williams do that, you know, 25 catches, over 400 yards, a score. Everyone remembers the two-point conversion. Like, I think those guys could be that type of player. Probably a little more upside with Williams even. I thought he had a really good scrimmage. So, yeah, there's talent in this room. Health, not all the time, obviously, because Jaden Thomas was held out of this thing. His hamstring is still bugging him. Jaden Harrison, the transfer from Marshall, his foot is kind of flared up on him, and he's been in a walking boot for a bit. So it's another one of those positions where Notre Dame has combated health issues. But, you know, the guys that I mentioned, those two freshmen, Jaden Greathouse, and then I'll throw Chris Mitchell in there as well. He made a couple really nice catches in this thing. I think that he runs a really good route, has some shake and some wiggle to his game. If he stays healthy, then he's a guy that defenses have to account for all the time. So, yeah, to your point, pieces all over the place. They just got to stay healthy, and Denbrock's got to put them together.
I guess the best way to wrap up the football portion of our conversation, since you've talked about a lot of areas, is go with this. There were the interceptions that took place during the scrimmage. A couple went back to the house for pick sixes. The defense is looking elite. But as you look at the interceptions, was that the defense dominating the particular play? Was it a quarterback making a bad decision? Is there any connect the dots between the three interceptions that has you concerned at all? Or is this just the defense being better?
I think it was a little bit, the terminology there, connecting the dots, because I honestly think it was a little bit of the defense having gone against this offense since March 7th, knowing what was coming.
Okay.
I saw routes jumped on both the Mickey and Watts interceptions. And those two play, well, the Minchie one for sure, who Minchie threw his interception to Watts. Watts knew exactly what was coming, jumped right in front of it, had no chance. I was a little bit more worried with the Steve Angeli interceptions, because he had other opportunities or maybe an opportunity not to throw the ball. And he still threw the ball in places that obviously ended in interceptions. So it was a knock on Steve Angeli. We've always talked about him as a good decision maker, smart player, knows his limits, is not going to test them too much. He tested them on Saturday and, you know, he got bit a little bit.
Finally, since you were last on the program, the women's basketball team lost a second player to the transfer portal, this time center Nat Marshall. And, boy, she was huge for this team with all the injuries coming down the stretch. She played the most important minutes of her career in the postseason. What is the significance of her loss?
Yeah, this is the KK Bransford version as it relates to the Notre Dame post play. They're both kind of the same players, serve the same purposes in different positions on the basketball court. So there's a lot of things that go with this. I thought Marshall was going to continue to be a very good role player, bring in that defensive intensity, can even get you a couple buckets at times. She showed she can make the mid-range jumper and has a little bit of a post-game tour. So you're losing that off the bench. And when you're losing something off the bench, obviously you're obviously losing another number. You're losing depth. And the number is now down to 9 scholarship players for the 2024-2025 season. That is simply not enough players to comfortably get through a season, because I hate to say it, but we've seen that it's kind of impossible to get through an entire season without at least one injury. Last year was like 4 or 5 injuries for this team. So Nielle Ivey's going to have to hit the portal pretty hard, and I think she's going to try to replace Bransford with someone who's willing to come off the bench and play that energizer type of role. And obviously she needs some depth in the post now too, because I think everybody is pointing toward the 5-star freshman Kate Koval to start. But who knows when Kylie Watson is healthy and available to be a supplemental player for her. And now you don't have Marshall as a supplemental player. So it's obviously there are players you could have lost that would have hurt more. Hannah Hidalgo's name was rumored, and she kind of put those rumors to rest and said, I'm staying at Notre Dame. That's huge. But when you're losing anybody in this era where Notre Dame's been battling scholarship numbers for it seems like three seasons in a row, it kind of stings a little bit.
Saturday is one of the biggest days of the Notre Dame football offseason with the Blue Goal game. For subscribers to Blue and Goal Illustrated or people maybe considering it, what are they going to find on your website Saturday and throughout the weekend?
A lot of stuff. We're going to break this down from all different angles. We have three people in the press box and then a photographer on the field as well. So we're sending the full arsenal that Blue and Gold has to offer to this game. And we'll even have people remotely working on this thing to cover it as well, because you can watch it on Peacock. I know a lot of fans out there are a little bummed by that, but they should be over it by now. A lot of these Notre Dame things are on Peacock, but maybe for those who don't, go to blueandgold.com because we will be there. We'll provide a ton of coverage, just offensive breakdowns, defensive breakdowns, looking at the quarterbacks in particular, some sidebar stories. Just like you said, this is one of the biggest days in the Notre Dame football offseason, and Blue and Gold definitely strives to cover it as well as anybody out there.
Tyler, greatly appreciate your time. Now go make some birdies.
All right, yeah, it's a beautiful day in South Bend, so I'm going to take advantage of that for nine holes here.
Do your best, Scotty Scheffler. Very good. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, I went to the University of Texas like Scotty, but
I'm not sure
if I can play like Scotty. I'll do my best.
All right, that was Tyler Horka. We had to pre-record our interview this week. Normally we're live, but he had some things to take care of. And right after we got done with our interview, some Notre Dame women's basketball news came about. And a big, big boost to next season. This isn't a surprise, but Maddie Westbeld is returning for a fifth season. Westbeld this year averaged 14 points and a career-high 8.7 rebounds per game. So Westbeld is coming back to a loaded starting lineup. You would have to imagine it is Hannah Hidalgo, Olivia Miles, Sonia Citron, Maddie Westbeld, and the dynamic freshman forward, Kate Koval. And when the preseason rankings come out in several months, Notre Dame is going to be a top five team in the country with a host of expectations thrown on their shoulders. I'm sure they've got high expectations in their locker room, but from the outside, there's no doubt all eyes are going to be on the Notre Dame women's basketball program next year, including Maddie Westbeld coming back. 6 o'clock is our time. Sports Beat continues next on WSBT South.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.